So good morning. My name is Kate Ashy. I am the proud author of a book, a chapbook of poetry, Our Day in the Labyrinth, published by Finishing Line Press last fall. Finishing Line is represented here today by Elizabeth Maines on the end. We have Josh Bowman here. He is the founder of Cut Bank Books. And we also have Lawrence Lenhart here from Diagram New Michigan Press. Their full bios are on the handout that you'll receive at the end of the session. So I'm not gonna take up our valuable time with that. You can learn more about them there. I wanna start by framing our conversation with a little bit of history on the chapbook form and some brief comments on where it's going currently. And then our panelists are going to expand on that in great detail.
So that's going to be the flow of today's panel. So it'll start with the intro, and we'll have the three panelists talk, and then we'll have a Q&A session. For the folks in the back, can you guys hear okay? There's plenty of seating up front if you want to come forward. If you decide to leave halfway through, we will not be offended, so come on down. So quickly, once again, my name is Kate Ashy, and I write poetry as well as the other genres. And my skin in this game is I recently had a chapbook published by Finishing Line. So the chapbook is commonly known as a poetic artifact, but it actually is enjoying increasing recognition for its presentation of fiction, creative nonfiction, and hybrid works. This panel, composed of independent and university presses and journals, will explore the unique and compelling nature of the chapbook form across genres. What are its advantages and limitations over presenting work as single pieces and in book-length collections? Panelists will share resources for engaging with the chapbook form. So what is a chapbook? We have all brought samples of what the chapbook is. We all have a stack. And at the end of the panel, after the Q&A, we'd love to invite you to come up on the stage here to take a look at those and talk with us and learn more about what they are. Fundamentally, the chapbook does not want to be a book when it grows up. It's fundamentally a scrappy form. It wants to be handled by real hands, to be read, and then its dream of all dreams to be traded or given away to someone else who will devour its words and pass it along once again. So physically, in your hand, how do you know you're holding a chapbook? It's short, it's usually fewer than 30 pages or so. That can vary, but that's a good marker. In our current culture, chapbooks generally contain short literary works, poems, short stories, novellas, essays, short memoirs. Traditionally, chapbooks are made and sold with cheap materials. So one story, for example, One Story Magazine, is like representing the form of the chapbook, very short, low quality paper, low quality printing, saddle stapled, but you know what? It gets the job done, right? The text is clear, it's light, it fits in your bag, you can take it with you, you can share it with friends. So that's a really traditional expression of the chapbook form. But those expressions are changing, and one of its current charms is how the production style can now range the gamut from this end to letterpress and single edition versions. So here's a letterpress chapbook example. Perfect bound chapbooks that are really nicely done, and everything in between, as well as chapbooks that are involving new media, QR codes that take you to audio or to other interactive media on the web. So that's a really exciting development. In terms of the chapbook's identity within culture over time, from the start, it has been an artifact for the common person. The chapbook arose in the 1500s when printing presses and reading skills, we have to remember, were still really rare. And the form helped people learn to read. So the history of this form is a deep and powerful history in culture. According to the British Library, the word chap comes from the Old English word that means to trade. Early publishers sold their chapbooks directly to readers in cities and also to traveling vendors called chapmen who came to the urban centers to fill their packs with small necessities like buttons and thread and needles and things like that, as well as chapbooks, to take them out into the rural communities and sell them there. And so these historical chapbooks would contain things like ballads, farmers' almanacs, children's literature, folk tales, nursery rhymes, political pamphlets, religious tracts, as well as scandalous, bawdy, entertaining narratives. And these have always been totally distinct from book-length works. From the start, the chapbook form has been associated with the cultivation and dissemination of new ideas. And so pivotal social movements, including America's own shift toward democracy and away from the monarchy, have been deeply influenced by this form. Do you guys remember reading Thomas Paine's Common Sense in high school? Or whenever you hopefully read it? That was a chapbook. And the numbers vary, there is some debate, but we think that at least 1 million copies were in circulation among the 2.5 or so million people living in the colonies at that time. This was a core text in unifying people around the revolution that gives us the country that we're in today, that allows us to have this gathering and this conversation. So it's really an important form. I'm super passionate about it. And it's a fundamentally open form. It's welcoming to new and diverse voices. I think our panelists are going to talk about why that is. And it represents an important and affordable way for emerging writers to enter the world of publication. It's a place where self-publishing and literary publishing overlap. I have here, do you guys know the author Steve Almond? He's a fiction writer, mostly an essayist. He's awesome. I love him. He has this book, which is this side of the book is This Won't Take But a Minute, Honey, and it's stories. This side is This Won't Take But a Minute, Honey, and it's craft essays. He self-published this. It has no ISBN number. He sells it out of his backpack, but he's also published by top national presses. So that's an interesting place where the form is overlapping. Social media has a deep connection now to the chapbook. One could argue that blogs are its newest descendants. And there's tremendous energy in the graphic narrative arena these days as well. So that's an overview of where we've been and where we are. And I'm hoping that we're going to get some more detail in that from our panelists, and also a glimpse perhaps of where we're going and how you can enter the conversation with your own chapbook manuscript, and also in collecting the chapbook manuscripts of others and sharing them. So with that, I think we're going to go ahead and start with Lawrence over here on my left, Lawrence Lenhart from Diagram New Michigan, and we'll just go down the line this way. And so take it away, Lawrence.
Hi there. So you may be more familiar with Diagram, the literary journal, which is published online. I think it's the second oldest, just by the fact that we've survived this long, in terms of online literary journals. I think Terrain.org is the only older literary journal that's online. But what people often don't know is that we also publish our journal in anthology form. We publish broadsides, and we also publish chapbooks annually. Some of our most recent chapbooks are up here for you to look at later. And as far as my role in that process, I am a reader for the chapbook contest. It mostly becomes part of the masthead of Diagram that reads the chapbook. We get a zip file, and we kind of just pick through our favorites, make a case for the ones that we love the most, and in the end, we have one winner, and we publish up to 4 or 5 finalists, which is not always the case with the chapbook contest. So one nice thing about New Michigan Press, Diagram's publisher and these chapbooks publisher, is that we get to see 5 books in print pretty much every spring. This spring, actually, we get 7. So I'll just start a little bit by thinking about the chapbook, reading about the chapbook, and then talking more specifically about New Michigan Press's role in all of this. And a lot of this echoes what Kate was mentioning just now, and I think that was a really hearty introduction to the form. So I would start by saying that chapbooks are an inherently hybrid form. By the name alone, we have to ask what distinguishes it just from a book. A chap is a curious modifier. When I first mentioned to my parents that my fiance had her chapbook published, the first thought they had was chaps and assless chaps, actually. I don't know why they went there, but they did. But like assless chaps, I think, you know, they're pants without a seat, chapbooks are also incomplete by design, and they leave you wanting more, perhaps. Two, the chapbook, like a punk zine, has the aesthetic and often the ethic of DIY. It is the business card of the literary world. They can be traded more freely than a standard book because they're cheaper. I often see my friends passing them around on Monday reading series in Flagstaff, Arizona, where I'm from, as a way of saying, this is who I am in the literary world. They're also reminiscent of their predecessors, the early political pamphlets, as Kate Ashe just mentioned, the Thomas Paine pamphlet Common Sense. So I would argue the chapbook is also a political form because it is a harbinger of cultural democracy in the literary marketplace. While pamphlets allowed a greater population of people to take part in the political process, I believe that chapbooks allow more people to take part in the publishing process. While risk-aversive publishing practices have marginalized books or authors who otherwise would be considered too risky to give their form to print, chapbook publishers are addressing that void. It has become a playground for debuts and hybrid genre work. Indeed, in combination with literary journals, this, I believe, is the new domain of the avant-garde. And it's not totally peripheral. When you publish a chapbook, it still exists in its other form, which is to say, many chapbooks find their way into larger collected works. And because of that, they can have a double life. They can be both independent and they can be interdependent on the rest of the collection. As far as New Michigan Press goes, the publisher for whom I work, we were established in 1999, so we can say that we've been around since the 20th century, which we like to say. We have 53 titles in the backlist and 7 new ones published this spring, bringing our total to 60. And to give an example of the kind of works that we're currently working on and publishing, our most recent is actually a chapbook of James Franco's poetry. If you know James Franco, have you heard of him? He recently got his MFA. He's a Renaissance man, often seen in Hollywood films, but also recently publishing poetry and several poems with Diagram. So this book is actually kind of tongue-in-cheek. We're not publishing James Franco's poetry so much as we're editing it and finding a home for it through the auspices of our collaborators, Sean Lovelace and Mark Neely. I'll just kind of give a list of some of the received forms that we often use for New Michigan Press. So they've taken on the guise of mathematical equations, creation myths, calendars, Ulipo constraints, bestiaries, a tour of the Winchester Mystery House, digital avatars, a mistranslation of Pablo Neruda, murder trials through the lens of bluegrass opera, fictional interviews with Gene Seberg, very tiny things, horoscopes, 12-step guides. There's lots of esoterica and lots of hybridity happening in our books. And in blurbies, they have been called both languagey and heartstrong. If you go to our site, this is how our press tends to define the chapbook, in case you're interested in exactly how we define that parameter of length. We are looking for interesting, lovely, unpublished work, and in prose and poetry, or some combination of the both, and it should be between 18 and 44 pages in length. Now, 44 pages is way beyond the parameters of our original chapbook when we were first publishing them as saddle stitched, which is an older form. So here we have the perfect bound, which allows us to go a little bit longer, and some of our collections are almost novella in length, almost 60 pages in length. I know also another chapbook publisher out of Tucson, we are out of Tucson, is Sport Press. And Sport Press has come to call the chapbook just about everything they do, they call a chapbook. So if they put out a mixtape, they call it a chapbook. If they put out a journal, they call it a chapbook. If they put out a novel, they call it a chapbook, just because it's a word that in their estimation has kind of lost some of its currency because it no longer means what it originally meant, meaning 16 to 32 pages. And I'll end just by mentioning that, you know, when we look for chapbooks, we sometimes publish very traditional poetry. We sometimes publish very traditional prose. But in the case of New Michigan Press, I think one thing that we see over and over again, year after year, is that we tend to publish received forms. David Shields and Matthew Vollmer have called this fraudulent artifacts, or in their anthology, fakes. These may take the form of, say, William Carlos Williams' This Is Just to Say, where you have a refrigerator note that addresses the plums that have been purloined from the refrigerator. Or you may think of Robin Hemsley's Reply All. So when we publish these, we tend to return again and again to these received forms, because when you publish something like a horoscope over and over again, and you really start to potentiate that form when it becomes an exploration that's a dozen or more poems, as opposed to just one looks like a sketch, or 200 is just overkill. We don't need 200 horoscopes. So I do think that a received form is best as a chapbook, because it is just an exploration, a chance to explore and play. I'll end there. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Lawrence. Thank you so much, Lawrence. So we're going to move now to Josh Fulman from Cut Bank Books. Thanks, Josh.
Hi, can you all hear me?
Good.
So Cut Bank Books originated from Cut Bank Magazine. When I was running the magazine, I really felt as though there were opportunities for a university program to expand, and chapbooks seemed like a very discreet, fun way to do that. In particular, me and the outgoing editor before me, Kate Rutledge Jaffe, felt as though we wanted to do something with books, but we didn't want to necessarily like pigeonhole it into a lot of poetry, which kind of seemed to be the predominant chapbook form. So we started a contest that was nonfiction, prose, and poetry, very much open to whatever we got. A little bit about Cut Bank. Cut Bank's the university-run student press out of Missoula, Montana, at the University of Montana. And I founded the press in 2000. This is embarrassing. I think it was 2011. And so for me, a chapbook is very much just a discrete object, something that's not wholly complete, but something that makes sense in a way that accretes and builds upon something. And very much when we were putting our books together, we were invested in what could be an art object. As we've all kind of said so far, chapbooks are very much an object that you need to hold and feel. And what we ended up doing was making small little books. This is kind of the first run, which has now kind of become a smaller run, and just different sized objects. They're great. And so when we were really pushing for a multi-genre contest, our first run, we ended up publishing a fiction, nonfiction, and poetry, these three books. And what we found when we were reading through the contest submissions is that what stood out the most were good writing, and writing that was very much estranged and kind of was just different in a way that can't really be explained, which I know is not very helpful, but something that had a beginning and an end. And its discreteness really helped, you know, put together a small little moment in which we could all enjoy it. This is a nonfiction book by Sandra Dollar that is a collection of hybrid poems, essentially, which is very interesting. We have a poetry book by Kristen Hatch, and then our winner that won that year is just a long kind of novella by Sean Bernard. And so that kind of also spoke to our limitations of the chapbook, too. What I found when I published these is that a novella seemed a little too long, but it also didn't seem like our guidelines of 25 to 40 pages was long enough. And so if I were to do it over again, I'd definitely make the fiction and prose side a bit longer. But for most things, 25 to 40 pages is a very solid amount to put stories or poems or essays in juxtaposition to each other and really have them speak and have a conversation that creates a really great kind of found object. What I'd really like to see in chapbooks, though, beyond kind of the print object, and is something really invested in the art objects. I've got some books by Good Morning and Menagerie, which is a press that is over in the 1400s, I think. They make printed objects that have very kind of beautiful textures and a feel, and they're just, I don't know, they're gorgeous. Lawrence kind of spoke to Spork as well, which they make great discreet objects. They have a letterpress, and I think they just expanded to a new shop, which is awesome. And kind of objects that don't make sense as books. One kind of comes to mind is Facsimile Editions has this kind of fold-out map of this book, which is a really interesting and fun way to interact with an object. Also, I think a digital platform is a really interesting way to go with chapbooks. Kelly Shearman runs Black Cake Records, which is a collection of kind of a mixtape of writing and sound art that's on a Bandcamp page, which is really cool. And kind of like, yeah, I think anybody can really put a chapbook together if you want. There's a lot of there's many platforms and you can do it for very cheap. And I think it's a great way to interact and involve yourself within the community, as well as have an object that you can either put out for a friend or yourself and just have at events. I think they're really great objects that can be shared easily. And you can do some really interesting technical work with them. And yeah, I'm going to pass the mic. We're going to...
So thank you. Thank you so much, Josh. So something that I'm noticing is that the chapbook community is a very collaborative community. You're hearing up here the different presses and magazines talking about other presses and magazines, too, and sharing the unique things that are going on. And so I think that's definitely... a special aspect of the chapbook form because it is so mobile and so portable and a different commitment level than other types of projects, I think it gets people talking across organizations more in an exciting way. So we're gonna move now to Elizabeth Maines. She's our third panelist and she's here today from Finishing Line Press.
Hi, thank you for having me. Finishing Line Press is known for publishing poetry chapbooks. We've published well over 2,000 poetry chapbooks since founding the press in 1998. We first started as a chapbook publisher. And then a few years later, we kind of branched out to publish novels and plays, and now we're doing full-length poetry collections. We started doing just a few editions a year, to be honest with you. Very small handmade books. I handmade them along with my mother, who was supposed to be here, Leah Maines. They were saddle stitched. This is one of our newer editions. We put ribbons, we had hand cut paper, but we've grown so much, 2,000 plus authors, that we are now moving on to Perfect Bound Books, which this is our new format. I personally do graphic design work for Finishing Line Press. I work as a costume designer in film and theater. So it's a very collaborative art form. For Finishing Line Press, a chapbook for us is a collection of poetry between 16 and 30 pages, and it may or may not include artwork or photos. We've had authors have their own artwork accompanying their poetry. We think that the chapbook is a successful venue for introducing new and talented poets to the poetry world. Whereas journals and anthologies gave a brief introduction to a poet's work, the chapbook gives more in-depth look at the poet without having to make a financial commitment to a full-length collection. In other words, it's a less risky way for a publisher to take on your work. And it helps get new poets more recognition. Finish Line Press is known for nominating our chapbook authors for awards, and our authors have won several book awards throughout the years. Finishing Line Press's main focus has been to advance the work of women. We publish many talented men, however, our focus has been to publish women since the beginning. We look for theme collections. One avenue we have used to find this new talent is our annual New Women's Voices collection that we publish every year, obviously. And that's a competition. Recently, we have seen a surge in the popularity of chapbooks. That's actually, James Franco actually kind of helped with that. There's a younger audience for them. They're just becoming way more popular. He used social media a lot, actually, to get the book out. And then we kind of think that the poems in chapbooks often are the first step in the process of forming a full-length poetry chapbook, collection. A lot of our authors have used poems from our chapbooks, and they've used them in their full-length books later on.
That's all I have right now. All right. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that the work from chapbooks can go into another collection of full-length book later on. I wanted to make a quick note about that. I know, particularly within the genre of poetry, that if poems appear in a book that's up to a certain length, and this length varies a bit by press, but it's generally like 32 to 40 pages. If something has appeared in something that length, it's considered having appeared in a full-length collection, and it cannot be submitted in a full-length collection. So that's something I've been learning. Check out the requirements at the presses you are hoping to be published with in your genres for full-length books, and make sure that you don't accidentally make a chapbook that takes all that material out of the running for a full-length manuscript, if that's your plan for it. So before we move to the Q&A, I want to go ahead and get the handout passed out, and I'm so happy that we have about 50 people here, actually. And I didn't really think there would be that many of you, so I only printed 30 copies. But don't fear, because I'm going to pass around this notepad. And if you would like to receive an emailed copy, you can sign up here. I promise I won't sell or share your email address with anyone, unless you put a yes in the right-hand column, in which case I will share your email address with these beautiful people, and they will add you to their email list so that you can hear about the wonderful opportunities at their presses. Maybe actually, I'm gonna talk a bit about the email. Sorry, maybe you can get it going around. Okay, so Lawrence is gonna get it going around. I'm gonna talk a bit about what's on the handout. And if people wanted a large print version, I've got a couple of those up here, too. So on the handout, you'll find at the top a series of different websites that list chapbook publishing opportunities across the genres. So you can check those out. Following that, you'll see some current calls for submissions from Diagram New Michigan, Cutbank Books, and Finishing Line Press. On the back side, you'll see a short list of venues that review chapbooks, and that list, these are not exhaustive resources. This is just what the four of us could put together. But I would love to know about more places that review chapbooks. So you can contact me. Our bios are all on the back page too, the back side of the one-page handout. So I'd love to know more about other venues that are reviewing chapbooks as well. So, one more item. So the notepad is going around. If you'd like to receive an emailed copy of the flyer anyway, even if you have a paper copy, sign up. And if you check yes in the right-hand column, they'll add you to their email list. I, by the way, come from Sacramento, and I do an email newsletter with Northern California Writing Events, so if you want to hear from me, you can stick that on there as well. Okay, so with that, I am going to step down from this mic, and I am going to come out to talk with you guys, and we're going to have some open Q&A, so get your questions ready, and I'm going to come to you with the mic, and we will get those going. So any questions? Okay.
This is a very...
I'll repeat it.
It's
okay. Oh. Go ahead.
This is a very simple question, but I was wondering, you didn't mention, Elizabeth, whether you do chapbooks of prose. Is it just poetry?
Okay, so the question that was asked is, does Finishing Line Press do prose chapbooks or just poetry?
Cupping does do prose, nonfiction, essays, hybrid forms, and fiction, and short stories.
And Diagram, of their 60 publications, about 80% of them, the majority are poetry, but we also kind of don't necessarily see all of our poetry books as just poetry. We also have poetry slash fiction and nonfiction slash poetry as well.
Awesome. All right, next question. Could you guys hear me in the back when I repeated it? All right. I'll get louder.
I was just wondering, is it okay for poems to be like disparate sort of things, or do they all need to be sort of thematically...
Great question.
...going, you know, thematically like a book would?
Okay. So the question was, when poems are submitted for a chapbook manuscript, do they all have to be thematically related, or can they be very disparate? Can you guys hear me now? Yeah? Great. So what do you say?
We've published both. We've had collections that were very thematically related to each other, and then we've had some where they weren't. It just depends on the manuscript.
I'd have to say the same thing. The book I have right here that I know very well, Through the Hourglass, is actually a collection of poems that is kind of based off of a soap opera, which is a weird kind of project and collection, but we have also published things that weren't discrete or anything like that.
And for Diagram, we do prefer books that feel like books or have some project in mind. That tends to lend to coherence, but not necessarily the case for all of our books. Some of them are very disparate and traditional, but and two, there's another kind of misconception because of our relationship with Diagram. The work that you submit does not have to be diagrammy, whatever that adjective means to you. It does not necessarily have to have a schematic. We love them. We'll publish them often, but not the only thing that we'll look at. Thanks.
Yeah, and I'm going to answer this question from the author's perspective. So the poems in my chapbook are Day in the Labyrinth, which was published by Finishing Line in the fall. By being in proximity to each other, they have become related, but they are not a project. I don't have like a project that I'm doing. And I actually have a short piece of memoir in that, don't tell your mom, I have a short piece of prose memoir in there. I have a poem that's for two voices. It's actually a duet where the voices speak at the same time. That was a finalist at the Missouri Review Audio Prize several years ago. So I would say from the author's perspective, read the guidelines at the publishers that you're submitting to, right? But you don't really have to totally follow them, you know what I'm saying? Like, if it fits, if it works in the collection, like that's what the publisher really wants. Now, if they're publishing poetry, don't send them a novella, right? I mean, you have to like follow that part of it. But, you know, I have prose poetry, I have lyric poems, I have definition poems, you know, found forms. I mean, I have a huge mix in my manuscript. So I think it's a matter of being true to your work, put work together that's interesting, pieces that talk to each other, and then you'll find the right press that appreciates that. Okay, I'm going to come down for the next question. I think there was one over there. Okay, I'm coming to you, and then you guys are next.
Good just curious about the financial viability of chapbook presses, particularly when they're not backed by like a university press, for example.
Great question. Okay, so the question was, what is the financial viability of a chapbook press, especially when they're not backed by a university press or maybe a community organization? So the question, did you guys hear me? The question was, what's the financial viability of a chapbook press when it's not backed by a university or a community organization?
Right. I would have to say that you know, New Michigan Press strives to break even. We make enough money to continue productions, to sometimes do second runs, but generally the mission is to continue and to have this project again this time next year, and we do a great job of that. And occasionally we can spring on other things as well, but for the most part we don't make much profit, but we do have some affiliation with the University of Arizona, so that there's also some co-sponsorship there.
Okay, we're going to take a quick detour to the author's point of view. So at Finishing Line Press, I did not win a prize. Like New Michigan, even people who don't win, people who are finalists, get published. So the contest that I submitted to, I think there were 239 manuscripts in the pool, and 10 were published. And I think one or two of those were like the winners in the first and second place. So I didn't receive any money. What I received is 10% of the print run as payment that I could sell or do with whatever I wanted. And the print run size was determined by the amount of pre-sales. And I had the option of buying up if I wanted a larger print run. And so I think that brings up a good point, that from the author's standpoint, the chapbook is a form that can be self-published with great success. If you aren't going to self-publish, well, if you are, you should go to some of the self-publishing panels here and learn how to do it well and hire an editor and a designer. If you're not going to self-publish, you do want to look for a press that is going to compensate you in some way to allow you to actually have some of your books to get out into the world, as well as the distribution that's available through the press. So hopefully that's helpful from the author perspective. Now, back to a press near you.
That's a good question. When I founded Cutbank Books, we had virtually no budget. We used the contest model to kind of help fund everything. So it was kind of a risk in that way. I'd like to say that Cutbank has a good university backing, but it's all hard work, and it's even harder when you're an independent press like Good Morning Menagerie. My friends just do this and put together awesome books, but it's all on, they hope to break even, and they make pretty close strides to that, but it's kind of very much a labor of love. They started doing a translation contest, which has helped a little bit, and I think it's a really weird, I forgot to talk about that, it's like a very weird niche thing that it's kind of interesting to have like a discreet translated chapbook. A lot of times there's poetry chapbooks that have a hard time finding like an audience, because they mostly have contests for that, or they have to go through a very kind of vetted process. So having a discreet kind of low risk translation is really interesting and awesome, but very much a labor of love.
I think Kate kind of hit a lot of points that we have. We don't do this for the money, we do it to give people opportunities to get art out there and to have people's voices be heard.
Yeah. All right. Okay, up here.
Right now, I have a chapbook from coming out from Finishing Line Press. Thank you very much. And I'm a little overwhelmed at this point in terms of marketing beyond my own, you know, network. I've chosen some beautiful art for the cover. I think I'm going to have some really good blurbs. But art, in the end, what is going to sell this book beyond my little circle?
Great. Let me repeat the question, okay?
So the question was,
just repeat the question.
Huh? Oh, yeah, go.
So I don't know if you heard in the back. Basically, the question is whether or not, how do you, once you have a chapbook, how do you market it? And this is actually something very close to my own. I have a book coming out soon, so finding a market for that is hard. I think one of the best things you can do as a writer is go do readings, try to do what you can as a tour just to get it out there. People can hear the work and interact with it, and then they can go after the reading and touch the object. And beyond that, social media is great. An email blast to friends, hopefully not too many times, good.
Yeah, it's very similarly. Social media has been a big help for people. Readings. The people that usually buy chapbooks are people that you know, though. But we've found success for people that are good at self-promotion. Yeah.
And I don't have a chapbook, but my partner does, and actually through Cutbank, the most recent, last year's issue, or last year's three printed publications. So what she found to be mildly successful, I think that too, there has to be some acknowledgement that maybe it won't happen on a large scale, but the most success that she found was to go to the individual journals that published some of those pieces, and to ask them to, even if it's just a matter of writing a paragraph on their blog, I think Portland Review was happy to say, we published one of your poems and we want that poem to find a wider audience. So, you know, and the good thing about getting a chapbook reviewed for something like a blog is that it doesn't take a lot of the editorial staff's time to look through it and to have a paragraph of opinion and support. So that was one thing. And then also local bookstores, not all are open to this, but the best ones are. And so hopefully you can have some network to tap to, whether it's your local or more broad community.
I'm going to borrow your mic.
We've had a lot of authors, they find a lot of success if they just put their work out there. We've had people read on Garrison Keillor and all sorts of things. It's just, you have to be willing to have people say no to you, I guess. Yeah.
Never mind. I'll go back to the podium. It's weird to talk with my back to you. Hold on.
So I didn't plan to weigh in as much on this panel as I am, but actually I think it's been a good balance. I hope that you guys don't mind. So from the author perspective, you have to be ready to not sell a ton of copies of your books. And that's just a fact. In the literary world, period. Like, unless you are picked up by Norton and you're their flagship book of the year or a press like that, you're going to have to go find your readers. I don't care who's publishing you. I don't care what you're writing. That said, I have found that some interesting things have happened. So I think I'm giving 12 or 14 readings total this year since the fall. And I found that the smallest groups at the readings, I've actually bought more books. And here's why. It's all about building relationships. And I don't mean relationships to use people, relationships in which you give people something that they value. So you share yourself with them. You share something about your practice. You share a craft strategy or a tip. You talk about your own publication path. That is what makes people want to connect with you through your book and support your book by buying it. That is how the literary world goes around people. So today, the best thing you can do is to pay it forward and go to these presses and go to the presses that they've talked about. Pick up a few chapbooks, check them out, give them away when you're done reading them so that other people can learn about them and put that energy out there. And this isn't like New Age juju, whatever. Like you want to start building those relationships now so that when your book is out, that energy filters back to you. And it's not a direct one-to-one equation. You may do something for someone else and they may never talk to you again, but they may say your name to someone else. And that person comes to your reading out of the blue and is like, oh, so-and-so told me about you. I want to check out your chapbook. Can I buy a copy? Can I buy one for my friend too, right? So I think it's really a relationship-focused business these days in terms of the marketing. I'm happy to talk more about some of my other strategies offline here at the end of the panel, but a quick short list would be get on your public radio station, your local public radio station. In fact, the genesis of this panel was a 10-minute interview that I did on Insight on Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. The link to that interview is on the handout. get on your public news station if you can. Do blog posts for other people. Participate in fundraisers. I participated recently in a fundraiser event called Authors on the Move in Sacramento. That's a library foundation fundraiser. So you have to give, and you have to give a lot before you get anything. The other thing I would say is, this is what I wanted to say. Some local bookstores will be willing, independents will be willing to shelve your book. It has to have an ISBN. So if the presses that you're looking at, and there are a few, are not putting ISBNs on their books, that may be a deal breaker for you. So that's something to be aware of, depending on what your goals are. Your goals may be different. Your goals may be, this is very personal material that you want to share just with family and friends. You don't need an ISBN for that, right? You don't need that. So be honest about what you want, what you hope to achieve, and how you hope to connect in the literary world through your chapbook. So we are doing very well on time. We still have time for more questions. And at the end, we will invite folks to come up and take a look at the samples. Are there more questions in the audience? I see one.
Thanks for coming.
Hi. Can you hear me? Can I hear me?
I'll repeat it. Okay. Go ahead.
So I want to know, when you enter these competitions, what's the time frame for notification and then from notification to publication? What are you looking at?
Sure. So the question is, when a manuscript is entered in a chapbook contest, what are the typical time frames for notification?
Can you repeat it?
Okay, so the question is, when a chapbook is entered into a contest, what are the normal time frames to hear back? I guess I'll start. So with Cutbank Books, a lot of the time frame I think that needs to happen, or what at least happened when I was running it, was basically getting it done before school was out, which I think approximated 4 or 5 months. Which is a lot of work, but worthwhile. But I think the biggest thing is, unless it's been a very, very long time, maybe 9 months to a year, kind of be patient about it.
It depends. Maybe about 6 months with us.
For New Michigan Press, because it is part of a contest as well, if we have a large volume of submissions in a given year, sometimes our editor, Ander Monson, will actually recruit extra readers beyond Diagram's masthead. So those years that look like they're going to be most daunting end up going kind of swifter. So I would say around 3 months, sometimes less. Yeah.
I've actually got a question for us all. Yeah. So how do you guys choose a book? What is the process and method of getting a submission to making a book?
We choose good work. We have a 4-8% acceptance rate. We read lots and lots of manuscripts. I don't personally. We have other people in the press that do that. But pretty much we choose who we think is very good.
Yeah, I would say it is a fairly democratic process for New Michigan Press, where the initial readers will just make a plea and say, this is something that I would love to see in book form. I remember one of our most recent, Nick Neely's Chitin and Other Creatures, this book. It was so good that I thought if Ander didn't pick it up for New Michigan Press, I would start my own chapbook press just to publish it. It was that good. And so it really starts from the bottom up. Obviously, our genre editors and editor-in-chief have the final say, but it really comes from oftentimes we're looking for esoterica that transcends the kind of cultural moment that it was, for example, Johnny Quest. If you use Johnny Quest in a great way in a poem, then we're probably going to pick up your chapbook. So it has to transcend the initial moment of its inception.
I have one other thing to say.
For Finishing Line Press, it doesn't matter if you've been published before, if you even have a background in writing. We've published people that it's their first book and they're in their 70s.
it's the work that speaks for itself, not what your background is.
I'm glad that you said that, Elizabeth. In my research into chapbooks, for my own submissions, I submitted to, I think, 12 contests or so in fall of 2014, which is the contest out of which my manuscript was selected by Finishing Line. And in my experience, these are blind contests, generally. If they're not blind, that's, you know, then having a publication record might help. But I'm going to tell you, as somebody who's worked for three different literary journals and designed contests and run contests in for two conferences and another journal, we're really busy on the editorial side. We're not going to read your bio. We're going to hope that we can read your whole manuscript in time to get it to the next person in the reading chain to review it. So I find especially that chapbooks welcome new voices in a way that a lot of literary journals do, not all of them. But on the full-length collection front, it can be hard for new voices to find a foothold there. And it's also more expensive. Usually the cost to enter contests for full-length collections is higher than the cost to enter a chapbook contest. Both of those are higher than the cost to submit to a literary magazine. But your odds are probably going to be a lot better with a chapbook contest than they will be with the, definitely with the literary journals, and probably with the book-length contest as well. So do we have any more questions in the audience? Has everyone had a chance who would like to provide email address to get a copy? You want the notebook to get a copy of the handout. Okay, I'm going to send that around. Is that a question or email sign up? Great. Okay. So with this, I want to thank you guys so much for being here. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. This is now the time that you're welcome to come up to the tables here and talk with us about chapbooks. In fact, I'm going to stay here with the email list, and you can just come up and sign it. And a couple more quick things. If you want to continue this conversation with me, I will often be at booth 621, which is the magazine for which I'm currently associate editor under the Gumtree. It's a creative nonfiction magazine. We can chat there. Under the Gumtree is doing an offsite tomorrow night, Bonaventure Brewing, 6 o'clock, Rooftop Garden, going to be amazing. I'll be there. It also just so happens Tupelo Press, I did the 3030 project fundraiser with them. Their event is there immediately following. I'll be reading a couple poems at that, and I'm available to chat there as well. So thanks for coming. Have a great AWP, and come look at our books and ask us more questions. Okay, thank you guys.